Red Cow Arcade.
Da-na-na-na-na-na-na.
And I want you.
Da-na-na-na-na-na-na.
And I need you. And I bless you.
Whatever it is.
The reason we're singing that is because I just cut together a trailer that will go out soon to buy the Volume 7 Blu-ray. And there's a moment in one of those many episodes where we were referencing the Terry Crews thing, you know, where in White Chicks, where he's singing it to one of the white chicks.
Right, right.
Oh, I love this song and I want you. It's a pretty funny scene, but we referenced it. And then, yeah, for some reason, I played like this crazy metal version while we were pouring Mac. And that ended up theming the entire promo. These are the things that you come up with when you have to edit something together real fast and you need some kind of creative angle, and you kind of just run with one.
Yeah, if you do it fast and you don't question yourself, who knows what you'll come up with.
Oh, yeah. No, it's so true. There's so many different ways to edit and to skin a cat. You know, like, I know, our friend Dan just came, Super Bob Hoskins Bros on YouTube. He just came out with the Mario Brothers movie trailer review, the 1993 one. Yeah. And it's like meticulously edited. I mean, like he doesn't let a joke pass him by. I mean, yeah. It's really, really top notch editing, like super good. I think it's his best edit for sure.
Yeah. But, so it's very polished, very like thoughtful.
You can tell that he wasn't winging the edit. He thought of everything and then he kind of had to execute it. Probably he built on stuff while he was editing. But for that reason, he falls into these holes and then he's like, well, now I didn't expect to have to dig so much.
It reminds me of, just like you're talking about putting together something and just making the edit happen. It reminds me of when I did the Game of Thrones reviews where I was just like, I had to get it done. And so a lot of the decisions I didn't even think about. So it's fun to go back and watch those because it's like somebody else made them. It really is. Like I forget like all the decisions that I made. So it's just like, it's brand new content for me.
When I have a mock-up of the Blu-ray. And so I was testing it and then Nina was like, oh, can we watch this Jump Cart? Can we watch this Box Mac? Or like, she was wanting to like watch some of the content. Cause honestly, like, especially for her, she watches them once, like every time we finish something and then we move on and we make the next thing. And so, yeah, like we don't go back and rewatch our own shit. Now that's okay, especially for me, because I spent a bunch of time in the edit and I probably don't want to, but she, you know, like, all things being equal, she's like, I would like to relive like that moment or whatever. And so I was rewatching some of it with her and I'm like, wow, I actually took the time to cut that in, or I actually took the time to demonstrate that or to time that out. And I'm repeatedly very pleased that I went the extra 10 feet each time, but always surprised. I'm like, did I have the time to do that? You know,
you made it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is funny because, you know, fans will reference stuff. And like that I forgot about.
Totally. Yeah, it happens all the time. I'm like, who said it?
Where it's just like, oh, well, our fans know our material better than we do.
I remember I used to love to listen to Trey Parker and Matt Stone's commentary tracks. It started with, they had one of my first DVDs was Cannibal. This is one of my favorite movies. And it was, they had designed the DVD like thoroughly. And I was so happy with it. Like, I was so happy to have it. It was like my favorite movie with an extra 7 hours of things I could indulge. That's probably like that. And then later Lord of the Rings was what like made me commit to the medium of Blu-ray forever, or DVD and then to Blu-ray forever. Cause I was like, this is such a great way to experience a movie. Like all the metadata around the thing. I really do think that that's missing from modern releases, but, and I used to get nerdily frustrated when somebody would buy a DVD or something. I was like, don't you want to also watch some of those like special features? And they're like, no, I just press play.
Play the movie. That's for nerds, all that stuff.
And don't you at least indulge in the chapter marks? No. I use fast forward like it's a VCR.
Play it at double speed.
But I remember so they had an amazing commentary track on Cannibal. They get drunk during it. And then I was like, I hope they can release more stuff. And then they released season 1 of South Park, and for some reason, I don't know if they ever announced the reason why, But ultimately, Comedy Central didn't allow them to package the commentary track, the full-length episode commentary track they did for every episode of season one. They didn't allow them to release it on DVD. And so, and Trey and Matt were mad about it. So they offered you an option where you could send in for a like a big package of jewel cases of CDs, EJ, of the commentary tracks. And then they taught you how to sync them the fuck up. And you better believe I did. I was like, I sent away for them and they sent them for free. And like with your proof of purchase of the DVD, it was crazy. That's and I remember crazy. I remember there was an interview that Trey had with Penn Jillette, and Penn was like, something I always like to ask people, like entertainers, like, what do you really do? He's like, you know, because there's normally one source of income that like is what how you really make your money. He's like, for us, it's the live shows. That's what we really do. He's like, what do you really do? And Trey was like, we sell DVDs. Like for a long time, like selling DVDs was how they made a lot of that money.
Right. That's what Matt Damon was talking about. Without the DVDs, like all those more indie hits, they just dried up, you know?
It was such a great DVD was such a great era. But what was that? I was going to say something about, they had said something on a commentary track. Shoot. Now I forget. Where were we going with that before all this?
Watching stuff and not remembering it. Your fans know.
Yes. Oh my God. You're so good. You're so good. Yeah. That's very impressive. You went straight to the heart of it.
I caught up your thread. I caught it.
I remember they would often not remember the episode in question. Like whatever they were like, oh yeah, is this the one with this in it? And I remember being like appalled, like not mad, but I was like, I know these episodes very, very, very well. How can they not? They made them for God's sakes, but it totally makes sense now.
Especially the volume of stuff that you make.
Yeah.
It's just impossible. It's impossible to remember anything.
And I remember Matt Stone say a few years ago, they were being interviewed about like, they had a big, renewal, like five seasons or something. And he was like, one day it's going to be really fun to like sit way back, like zoom way out and watch all of this show. He's like, because it is tailor made for my sense of humor, you know? And so like, it, like with enough distance from it, it might be really fun to just watch it and enjoy it, you know?
Yeah.
That is the dream. I don't know if it's possible, but I think that's the dream. So certainly with feature, I can't watch Boxmack or Judd's Car or whatever. Like I could totally rewatch those and enjoy them because I don't remember a thing about them. But rewatching like any of my features, that tends to be like a shoddy. That's like not something I would enjoy watching it with an audience just to see kind of how they respond, because you rarely get a chance to watch things with an audience. But other than that, like when we've done streams, I'm just all in the chat. I'm not really like paying attention that much to the movie. Because I don't know. There's something about like the amount of time you end up spending on a feature that does poison you from it. You just spend too much time in the oven. Well, speaking of filmmakers, here's a big update. Kevin Smith, yours and mine, has revealed what's been ailing him, what's been troubling him. And he released it as a 35-minute video through People.com, People Magazine. And it's not anything that we predicted. So we were like, okay. So to recap for people, we knew that he had quit weed. We knew that he felt like he was numb to the world and like he wanted to become like his authentic self again. But it seemed like something catastrophic happened either with personal relationship. I suppose it's possible. He made a lot of references before we saw the new video to like, I'm really sorry for the people I've hurt. They must want me dead. He was making comments like that. And so we were like, maybe like his wife left him or something. It sounds like he's been living in New Jersey. Maybe spending all of his time at his movie theater. Well, yeah, it's not what I expected. So he tells his story in this order. Have you seen the video or am I just explaining it to you?
Yeah. Explain it to me. Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen it. Yeah.
He says, when I was six, I was sexually abused in the form of an older kid made me perform a sex act on another six-year-old. And she and I remember it, and I've never seen that kid again. And that was, like, traumatizing. And then I had two other traumatic experiences One was I was in a classroom saying the Pledge of Allegiance in like when I was nine, and the teacher said like, "Ew, Mr. Smith, like the gut on you," or something like, you know, something very like hurtful about his looks. And then the third time was he was going down a water slide when he was nine, and like a teen was like, hey, no pregnant ladies can go down the slide. And so those were like times where he felt humiliated or controlled or exploited. And he feels that that colored all of his experiences from that point forward. It's what traumatized him into developing unhealthy habits and an unhealthy like self-perception. Now, when you come out with like, hey, I had a mental break, everybody, that's what he did. So he had a mental break. I'll talk about that more in a second. And then you say, and here's what I found. I was sexually abused. The way I first thought of it was like, oh, is this a repressed memory or something? And he, like, through therapy, he found out about it, and that's what's going on. No, it's more like, because I actually have heard him tell all of those stories before throughout his whole career. It's more like he's now discovering how much they hurt him and how that hurt dictated his behavior from that point forward. So the behavior, I think now would be a good time to jump forward in time and talk about the actual event that happened. And then I think all of this trauma talk is him trying to make sense of the mental break. I think the jury's out. I mean, I think there's no way to know, like, are those the experiences that caused it or what?
I would never assume anybody's, I don't want to like dictate like, hey, no.
Yeah.
You suck it up.
And so that's what the video is about. The video is called Trauma is Trauma. And it's about how like I'll get there in a sec. So he had a dissociative episode where somewhat all of a sudden he felt a break with reality. Now I've never had anything like this before, so I don't quite understand it. I just have to kind of take his, like, I have to try to understand it through the way he describes it, but it's something like he felt as though he was not himself. And I don't mean, I don't feel like myself. I mean like a break with his identity, where the reality that he was living was suddenly discovered to be a complete fraud. And he was, it sounded like he was suicidal, at least for a period. He went nuts, is the way he describes it. So much so that he checked into a clinic in Tucson, Arizona. So something, yeah. And so I asked, you know, Nina knows a thing or two about this. And so I was like, what was this like psych episode? And she was like, well, it could have been like, could have been that he was, had a lot of disorganized thoughts, disorganized behaviors, not making sense to people. Like suddenly, you know, being like way too humorful, suddenly being extremely depressed. She's like, it could have been, that's normally the form that it comes in. And she floated the idea of, she was like, it could also, you know, like that's a lot of weed he was smoking. And they're like, you know, you can have like, it's perfectly common to have psychotic episodes. She was like, substance induced psychosis is what it's called. And she was like, it's extremely common with teens. Like, it's the number one cause of it.
No, Frankie, weed is completely harmless.
Oh boy. Remember we laughed last time about like, don't go after their weed. And sure enough, like it's always interesting whenever you say anything divisive or controversial. Whenever we do, I'm always like, well, cause sometimes it's great. Sometimes there's like, it turns out that, you've invited a bunch of people who don't normally talk about things to talk about them. And you kind of like find your people a little bit more. And other times it's like, how do I make a video that for the next 48 hours, I'll just be fielding comments that make no effort to understand what I was trying to say, or are deeply offended by like a different perspective on something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But look, he said it himself. He was smoking every minute of every day. I mean, this is not, if you're out there smoking weed, I bet you're not smoking as much as Kevin Smith was based on what he was saying.
If I were to guess, that would be the cause of it.
Now, the weed habit, I believe, came out of trying to silence self-loathing thoughts.
Yeah.
And the self-loathing thoughts and also the anxiety and all the rest of it. This is kind of like dysfunctional personality that he had, which he now talks about, I think, really intelligently and in a really helpful way. Very helpful for him. That's obvious. It's like self-therapy and probably helpful for a lot of people, because I think most people are living some degree of what he's describing. So what he describes is these things, whether it's those three events or other things like them or whatever, led to him having an unhealthy self-image, but also trying to minimize the harm that they caused him. So it causes him all kinds of harm. And then he's like, what can I do to make this small? What can I do to make this kind of like packaged away? And so for him, it was self-deprecating humor. It was being on all the time. It was being a big personality. It was accolades. It was achieving above, you know, so it becomes, he kind of answered it with becoming a high achiever from his perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And he describes that as becoming the other guy. That's how he's like, you know, this Carnival Barker personality that I have, that's the other guy. That's me embodying somebody I wish I was, somebody who I feel better when I'm acting like, somebody who gets pats on the back. And he's like, and I really believe that Clerks was made by the authentic me, and that a lot of what I did after Clerks was feeding the ego of this other guy, or letting this other guy take the wheel.
That's interesting.
And that the mental break was him suddenly realizing that he has not embodied his authentic self in a very long time, in a frighteningly long time. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about that. I mean, I mean, because, like, yeah, we all put on masks whenever we're, interacting with other people. And so, like, what is your true self, and what is it an amalgamation of these personalities that you put on? I don't know. It's, you know, if that's his way to cope through what he's going through, that's cool.
Well, he smoked weed to make the kind of the anxiety of it all go away. And then he increased it and increased it and increased it and increased it. And I personally believe maybe then had a psychotic episode as an amalgamation of the unhealthy behaviors, the amount of substance he was taking in, who knows. But so he goes to this facility, and that's when he learned this meditative self-therapy stuff, this living in the present stuff. It's when his therapist told him, like, these events that you're talking about are actually abuse and they're actually trauma. And just because you weren't a World War II vet doesn't mean that your amygdala didn't process the information as trauma. And I think that's a pretty important thing to talk about, because, like, we have children.
Mm-hmm.
I think you understand just how sensitive their brain development is. Like, when you're, certainly something traumatic can happen to you later in life that affects you a lot. But at least when that happens, you've already mapped the world. You have like a fair in fact, it takes ground, like earth shattering stuff to traumatize you, because you've already mapped the world. You already have a solid understanding of what's good, what's bad, what works, what doesn't work, what's fair, what's unfair, what's true, what's not true. And when you're a child, you're really just taking everything as truth for a while.
Just taking everything in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, if you're 9 and somebody says, ew, like gross, like, yeah, I mean that of course that can stick with you. And now that he says it, I'm like, so many of his self-deprecating jokes were phrased in the form of like, ew, you fat fuck, you know?
Yeah.
They were through that, like, disgust thing, that right. loathsome thing. He also said, you know, I think this might be like something I've noticed about Kevin is that he'll connect dots that I don't, like, who can say whether or not those two dots connect, but he'll do it with things like, he'd be like, without this person, there'd be no Clerks. Without this set of conditions, there'd be no Clerks. And with it, like, he'll draw crazy diagrams.
Like the yarn on the wall.
Yeah, yeah, he's Charlie Day. about like how, like, yeah, without Penn and Teller, there's no Jay and Silent Bob. It's like, I don't think that's necessarily true. But he was like, and maybe that's why I became a director, you know, after the sexual abuse, because I don't want someone directing me anymore. I'll direct somebody else. And I was like, I don't know. It sounds like everything that you described about why you want to do in a film had nothing to do with that event.
I don't think every manager on the planet It's been through that, you know. It's like, yeah, I think he just has managerial skills, you know.
He's probably just trying to make sense of things. Yeah. And so, one of his books was called like a story about a fat kid who did good. Everything was like, I'm fat, I'm dumb, but have you noticed that I'm better than my self-image? You know, like, yeah, he definitely had a self-esteem problem. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
He says he thought during his mental break that the other guy killed his authentic self, killed it, his himself, which is, you know, that's crazy stuff.
Yeah, that's good.
In the facility, he felt like the other guy wasn't allowed in because there was no opportunity to sell t-shirts. There was no opportunity to tweet about this. There was no opportunity to in any way incorporate his business and his media savvy into what he was working on.
Well, that totally makes sense. And I think I do think meditation and prayer is important. And even people take media fasts sometimes, even if you're secular, they'll take, Saturday off from even looking at your phone. And I think that's healthy. It's healthy to, be with yourself for a bit.
I'm dealing with it with my kid right now. She was struggling with just getting tasks at school done in a timely way. Like everything, she seemed to understand the math, seems to understand the reading, but she would take an extra 10 minutes. And Nina was like, let's start not doing any, we would watch Bluey in the morning. And she was like, let's not do TV in the mornings anymore. And I was like, do you really think that no TV is going to relate to better attention span late, 5 hours later? And it seems to have. Either that or she's just growing out of it. But the theory is that this idea that every time you're bored, you can pick up the phone, you can pick up the TV, you can be mediated, you can be immediately entertained. It's a problem. It's a problem I have for sure. I'll end up breaking down this podcast later and I will put on some kind of media. I won't just putter around quietly and do it,
it's true. I am awful with that. Obviously famously with dishes, but, washing dishes, put on something, but every chore, everything I was mowing the lawn today and I was pissed off that the lawnmower was louder than my headphones. So I couldn't listen to anything. But then it was kind of nice because I was just like, oh, you know what? Maybe it's just time to take in my thoughts for a bit.
And this is beyond that because this is also how can I turn every genuine experience into something that's consumable entertainment by somebody else? Does it sound familiar?
Sounds like, yeah. It's like I just bought my wife a bread maker. I'm like, how can I turn this into content?
And he even said, he was like, at my movie, so he started attending, like we talked about last time, Codependence Anonymous, CODA. So it's like an AA program for codependency. And so at the time we didn't know, we were like, who's he codependent on? An individual apparently he's codependent on external validation. He needs somebody to tell him he's good all the time. Good point. And also he became very much addicted to it's a people pleasing thing. He wants to entertain. He wants to be very available to people so that they'll think well of him. And so he said that was part of the problem too, was he ended up overextending himself and he would commit to a trillion things and be bad about following through with them. So what else? Yeah. So he started going to these CODA things and then he got the idea of I can hold meetings at my movie theater. And then he actually had to pull back. So I think he's doing it, but he was like, it's gotta be totally anonymous. There's no, I can't be charging for it. It can't be Kevin Smith's CODA.
Get my, come to my meeting. You can get a t-shirt.
Yeah. Dan Silent Bob's codependency. He was talking to his buddy, Scott Mosier, who produced all of his early films and now is working with Illumination on stuff. He directed the Grinch movie.
Right.
Very, very interesting change. And I think he's a really funny and talented guy. If you ever listen to old Smodcasts, he's very entertaining on that. And I think the Grinch movie has a really cool wit to it that clearly came from him. Anyway, but he's a secular meditation guy. He's a Sam Harris, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, spiritual, but not religious. And so he was asking Kevin, he said, what would you do? And I guess they ended up talking about this a lot at therapy. what would you do if you couldn't, if you had every opportunity in the world, if you know there were no limits, what would you do? What would you spend your time on? And then he started talking about like movies or media, and they were like, that's not your job. That's not media related. And he was really struggling to come up with stuff. Like he didn't have like a place he wanted to travel or a, you know, there was nothing kind of like inner fulfilling that he could think of, which is worth a thought or two. I mean, I don't know if, is it unhealthy if all of your passions are funneled through a single place? Probably.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. All my passions are funneled through the same place.
So. Yeah, I mean, I got my family. I got my creative stuff.
Yeah, so. Family. Yeah, family, obviously, and then the creative endeavors, which is my job, and then it's also my recreation.
Yeah.
But then you know I do gaming too, which I try not to make content all the time.
I find it hard. I'll be like, you know what I should do tonight, even though it's going to delay things. I'm going to play a fucking video game, and I don't do it. I end up, I'm like, yeah, but think about how much better you'll feel if this thing is off your plate.
Yeah.
And that always wins.
Yeah, that's definitely a struggle.
So, he talked a lot about trauma being trauma, the amygdala. He was self-conscious about this. He made repeated reference to like, I know I'm going to get trolled or I know I'm going to be whatever. one thing I thought was, I was like, is Randall going to have a psychotic break now?
and Clerks 4. Randall smoked too much weed, had a mental break.
Is that what's going to happen here? but the drugs thing, I just got to return to it just for another moment. I mean, like the conclusion he came to was, oh, drugs are a temporary solution. They're an incomplete solution to a bigger, deeper problem. And good on him. I'm super, super happy he discovered that. I'm really happy that he's messaging it because it's an unpopular message, frankly. Hmm. And frankly, it's very unpopular. And, they all want to smoke doobies.
And I was talking about it.
The guy
was fake news. It's fake news.
He was called fat at the top of a slide. Wasn't who got called fat in a slide?
That guy did right there.
There he is.
There he is. There he is.
No pregnant women on the slides.
That's what they said. That's what they said.
You don't want pregnant women on the slides. Vote for Trump, okay? We're going to take care of you. Anyway. I'm glad he figured that out. I'm glad he's messaging that, but I kind of want to, I'm like, didn't we all learn at age like 5 that like one of the messages that they send out there into the world, I know people hate DARE and they think it's overblown. It conflates weed with coke and whatever else. I get it. I agree. But I think one of the central messages of all that drug education was drugs are not the solution to your problems. That was what I heard.
You would know. I'm so amazed that you have a video of yourself at some sort of DARE graduation or something.
Yeah, they picked me. Yeah. Like, here's a guy.
This guy is so anti-weedy.
This guy is such a narc.
He's going to come speak at the DARE celebration or whatever.
There was some kind of like a speech contest and I won it. They were like, all right, you represent. There was one from each class, and the rest of them were all girls. I was the only boy.
Very emasculating. The only male narc.
Hey, ladies. I'm liking weed either.
I'll never touch it.
Oh, did you know it's a gateway drug? Well, making fun of myself, spare me a few of your fucking comments. One guy was like, you've made fun of thruples and you've made fun of weed. And I represent both of those topics.
Sir, have fun.
He didn't understand what made Taika Waititi being so distracted by his threesomes that he made a bad movie. He didn't understand what made that so fucking funny. If you don't get it, then I can't help you.
Taika Waititi.
Taika Waititi. Okay. And then finally, what he didn't address, and I wouldn't expect him to on people.com, no one would know what the fuck he was talking about, that I think a missing piece of the story is whatever happened with these Tell 'Em Steve Dave guys, because something happened with them, and I don't think that they're reconciled. Hmm. I see a lot of Tell 'Em Steve Dave fans who are like, I demand that Kevin apologize. And I would say, like, not knowing anything about the details, at this point, it seems to me like he's being very vulnerable. He's talking very openly about his problems. Hopefully these guys can all connect on whatever fell apart there. Hmm. Yeah, he's sick. He's mentally, you know, he's definitely got a major issue. Like, and stack that on top of the fact that he almost died 5 years ago of a heart attack.
Right, right. Which, you know.
Yeah.
He had to make a movie to cope with that, so.
And, you know, in the scheme of things, like, he's still he's a very gentle, I think, caring, sensitive person. Like, you watch the video, I think anybody with a heart would be like, I'm glad he's working on this. Sounds like he's in deep. Oh, there's something I missed. Was one of the things that he said really helped him was this therapy called EMDR. Now, that's not a drug. That is, what does it stand for? We're going to find out right now. We're going to use the internet. Oh, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. So the concept is you're going through some kind of, like, recollection therapy related to, like, eye movement or something. And the idea, and it seems like a good idea, is to take whatever it is, whatever traumatic memory that your brain is fixated on that's causing you to repeat cycles of bad behavior and to continuously feel PTSD, and turn them into, like, distant memories. Like, oh, yeah, I remember that. It doesn't hurt me now. Hmm. And you do it through, yeah, whatever the physicality. I don't – forgive me for anybody who knows more about it. But it seems like it's related to the physicality that they put you through, and also, like, you know, you relive the experience and you talk your way through every second of it and, like, try to understand it. And, you know, because you can think of, like, really bad memories probably in your life, like things that could have really fucked you up, but they didn't. Yeah. For some reason, you're just like, oh, yeah, that's – when I think about that, I cringe a bit, and that's kind of it, and I move on from it. Versus things that, like, ooh, that, like, cut me so deep that I moved forward with that scar, you know?
Yeah. It's like giving yourself trigger warnings so that you can keep – it won't trigger you. It's right. Like you have to relive it to actually lessen that trigger.
Yeah. 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 It's something like that. It's like a yeah, you know, other forms are like journaling where you're –
yeah,
going over the thing again. You know, so you're making the thing you're not avoiding and minimizing the thing in this kind of unhealthy way where you're trying to, you're like, oh, I'll just smoke weed and I'll feel better, you know?
Hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that's Kevin. Oh, he says he's going to stay off of the internet. Not entirely, but you won't see him as often. That's his promise.
I think that's good for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably. Probably. I think
it's good for everybody. Yeah. It's no good on there. Especially, it'll just work you up.
Yeah, you know, I've been accused once or twice of caring too much about what other people say about me on the internet. And I think that this is half true. And I think it's half false. I think that I've been misunderstood again, EJ.
You keep talking, you keep being misunderstood.
Let's see if I can find, I described it the other day. I was trying to they were like, hey, like, have you ever heard, it was on Discord. They were like, have you ever heard a comment that, like, really hurt you? Yeah, I can't find it at the moment. You know, that, like, really, and I was like, well, you know, yeah, there's the very occasional one that, like, hits upon something about my looks or about my this or my that makes me feel like, oh, like, I thought I was the only one noticing that. Other people are noticing it, and, like, it'll affect your self-esteem. But those are rare. Those are, like, in the 3% range or something like that. It's more like there's, like, three other categories of negative comment that I engage with, which makes it seem like I'm very, like, concerned about them. But it's more like, yeah, there's some that are like they raise a good point, but they do it in such an inflammatory way that they kind of, like, spark my competitiveness.
Yeah, it's just, you know. You gotta temper their beliefs, man. You gotta make them defend what they're saying, because a lot of people spit a bunch of shit.
Oh, I found it. Okay, yeah. So there's being angry when groups of people deliberately mischaracterize you or speculate incorrectly about you, right? So there's correcting the record. There's that. Right. There's like, don't say, especially if it's happening in groups. Like if it happens isolated, whatever, that's, you know, fine. One-offs, you know, you never really talk about that. You expect that from the chaos of the internet. What else? I fucking lost it. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So there's like, there's being competitive, there's setting the record straight, and then there's sometimes they'll say something hurtful, or the other times they just disagree with you, and then you actually get to have a cool conversation.
Yeah,
that happens.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it is social media. You gotta, and it helps you if you respond to comments. You're trying to, you know, make an argument for your position, and I think that only strengthens, you know, what you're trying to get at.
Yeah.
You know, just. People used to argue all the time. People used to have big debates.
Yeah.
Now we just have a bunch of stupid debates.
Yeah. Micro debates. There's like annoying, competitive, hurtful. And I would say hurtful tends to be like in the vast minority.
Yeah. And usually, you know, it's just stuff that's like, oh, yeah, that doesn't even resemble reality. So it's easy to discount.
Right. Right. If it does, that's the thing about like a hurtful comment is it has to ring a little bit true with you. That is the secret to it.
Yeah.
If you want to hurt somebody. if it's just total fucking nonsense, you're just like, okay. Then it's fun to like screenshot it and post it around your friends and be like, "Can you believe this fucking guy thinks I don't like weed?"
It's true.
I have speaking of judgmentalism, I'm judgmental about something.
Okay.
When somebody has too many tabs open in their web browser.
Oh shit! I gotta close my tab. I'm the same way. I don't like having unread emails. If I see somebody with unread emails, that's a big trigger. And you know, I try to clean up my tabs after every once in a while. Just
Well, you know, there's having 30 tabs open, right? And that's a lot of tabs, and that's too much. That's too many. Unattended to tasks, in my opinion, because the tabs are delineations of things you like. The reason you left it open is because you'd like to get back to it. Otherwise you'd close it out. And I have a bias towards like, I overclose things out in my, I'm very reward system based where like, yeah, I'm a zero inbox guy. So I want to get the email out of my inbox so that I know it was attended to and I can move forward. And tabs are kind of like that too, where I'm like, am I done with this tab? Good. Close it. Then my brain isn't idling on that task anymore. So I view it as like, if you're unorganized about how many tabs you have open, I assume that you have a little bit of a disorganized way of approaching your tasks, that you're a little bit like you're half opening shit. Like you went to the kitchen and like opened like five different boxes of chips and like only ate from one and left, you know, like something like that. But whatever like I said, 30, that's a lot, but I'm not judging you. I encountered somebody the other day. It's like the people, you look at their phone and it's like 750,000 unread messages. I'm like, I don't even know. I didn't even know the notification badge went up that high.
That's like, yeah, when they start getting really small, you can't even see any words on them or whatever.
But I saw somebody the other day. It was slivers of tabs. And it probably was like 350 tabs, I'd say, on one window. 350. You couldn't click it. The fucking cursor is too big.
What a life.
And I asked her, I was like, what is this? Are you okay?
Yeah, are you okay?
And she was like, oh, please, that's nothing. The other computer has got 600 tabs. I was like, are you bragging about how much of a mess you are?
It's like my living room is full of dirt, but my family room is full of mud.
I'm very judgmental about this. Close your shit out. I have such a bias towards closing things out. Like I overdo it. I'm like, fuck, why did I close that? Now I gotta go like log into that thing again. But yeah, I'm pretty obsessive about, I read something a couple of years ago about like a lot of high achieving people have a similar mindset, which is whatever was on your to-do list that day, like can't bleed into the next day. Like it's got, you got to close out today's shit today, you know?
I'll even be that, like that in like Discord. I'll just like go through all the channels and make sure they're all like, you know? they turn like from the bolded white to like the silent white.
Clear that shit out. You know, we live to clear notifications, don't we?
Yeah, that's my life.
That'll say that on your tombstone. He cleared all his notifications. This is his final notification he's clearing. I always think it's funny. Like there's channels in the Discord that I'm not super attentive to. Like they're the ones
I'll
that
click
are,
them anyway, just to make make it go away.
Oh, definitely.
Make the white text go away.
Sometimes like I have to train new people at work, and I can't in good conscience be like, so really you should clear all your fucking notifications if you're anyone. They'll be like, oh, it's fine. Is that one important? I'm not gonna look. I'll probably just not read that then. And I'm like, I don't know how you're gonna notice the important things then. But in Discord, there's ones I don't care about as much. But so I'll just go there to clear the notification. And then I'll kind of like give it a cursory glance, and I notice they're talking about us. Like the whole, you know, like I went absent for 3 hours, and I'm like, they're talking about Frankie and EJ in this whole conversation. Now I got to read it.
Yeah, exactly. Like my ears are burning.
Yeah, really. Yeah. It's like, well, if you're going to talk about me, you got to make sure it's all accurate. Really didn't want to talk about this, guys.
Anyway, like, comment, and subscribe.
I didn't want to make this video. I really didn't.
I
have fast become that guy. It was the last time I did this preamble, but I'm not going to talk about the Cinemassacre shit again, am I? And so in the past 2 weeks, another little thing happened. Kieran got a little saucy. He got a little fat and sassy on a stream.
Soups and breads.
Kieran had bought some soups and breads and got all fat and sassy. Kieran got all fat and screen wave. So, speaking of people talking about us, he went back on a stream. There was some sort of belching girlfriend behind him, and I'm pretty sure she burped at one point. I'm pretty sure she was. I'm not saying it just to be inflammatory. I'm pretty sure she was like,
"This is a Belgian."
Yeah,
girlfriend.
Kieran, you go, boy. anyway, he went on stream and he talked a bit about Screenwave, but he did that thing again where he's like, "I'm not gonna post this, so people better not repost it." But of course, Cinemassacre Truth did.
It's like, you better not post this, man. Anything you put on the internet is forever.
This sure is a very sexy sex game that you're all playing with each other. I'm going to put up a stream and I bet nobody will screen grab it and put it on that subreddit.
For that dirty subreddit who's obsessed with James and Screenwave.
A bunch of trolls and hatters. I'm not making fun of Kieran at the moment. It seems to me like they're locked in some kind of covenant where he makes a stream and they repost it.
In a covenant of our own, I guess.
We're locked in a covenant with all of this shit. A never ending cycle. So do you, you didn't watch his stream, I assume?
Oh no, no, no.
Hello, I'm the Frankie critic. I watched it, so you don't have to.
Thank you. I feel like I've watched, you know, the Nostalgia Critic. He was so good with those little catchphrases. You know?
Did you watch all of Dylan's video?
Oh yeah, and that's what made me think of like how good he was with like he came up with these little phrases that stuck in your brain, and it was true. He covered a lot of stuff that I thought I watched because he covered it.
I loved Dylan's video. Dylan, I know you're watching this. You're the man. Keep making awesome. I cannot wait for part two. I know it'll probably take you a million years because I can see how much work that is. But I really, really enjoyed. And all he did was cover the first year. He covered prior to the first year of Nostalgia Critic and then the first year of That Guy with the Glasses.com. That's what it was. He went up to the first anniversary video of That Guy with the Glasses.com when all the autistic folks are in a hotel or something doing the anime fights.
With the curtains drawn. And
we were talking to our friend Jason. He was like, I wanted to be one of those autistic kids so bad. I just wanted to be part of whatever they were doing, all their Naruto runs and all the rest of it. And is it just me, or did Lindsay Ellis sure looked happier, didn't she? She didn't look nearly as eaten away.
They all looked pretty happy and probably fragrant in the hotel.
Odorific. So yeah, they jumped on a stream, and these are the things that he said. He mentions us, so we'll get there. But it kicked off with he's super mad at Newt to this day, that Newt guy. He is not happy about that plagiarism thing at all. Because I guess, yeah, like he had to re-edit. He and this Sean guy, who now is editing AVGN, had to redo the entire thing.
Like, I'd be mad at Newt too.
Yeah.
That's...
I'm still not mad primarily at Newt. It's... Yes, he's personally responsible.
Yeah, you're right. It's the whole organization there is just sounds like a nightmare.
Well, no offense to Newt, but it seems to me like Newt was not qualified for this job. And I don't know why you'd be like, you, rando, run this entire show that's very important to our brand.
Yeah, write the episodes.
So he was mad probably because they had to redo the whole thing. He said that despite pulling off the heroics, he got a bad eval. So now I'm imagining, like, you got to go through a performance evaluation conducted by Big Ryan. Yeah. I'm just being so humiliated. Yeah, go ahead. Hit me with your best shot.
It's so weird to think of him as, like, the manager. I don't know.
Right?
Or like...
Sinclair, get in here now!
Or would it be Justin? Like, would Justin be his direct report? Or would...
Oh my God. Yeah, he's like the middle manager.
Yeah.
But he's still pretty mad at Newt. He was shocked. He was like, oh, Cinemassacre Truth found it. They're always talking shit. That can't be real. And then they started looking into it and discovered that not only was the first episode, but every single moment of every single episode was deeply plagiarized.
Oh, no.
That's bad.
I think I heard it was like 20 out of 30 or something like that.
Yeah, pretty good score. So his first Red Cow, the first time that Senpai acknowledged us was, he wanted to set the record straight. He did not rage quit because the thumbnail, it's very sensational. It says AVGN editor rage quits. I'll tell you the reason that I wrote AVGN editor was so that I wouldn't put like Kieran. I was trying to abstract it a little bit. I was trying to make it about AVGN and that'll become relevant later, but he says, no, I didn't rage quit. Something. He makes some distinction without a difference.
He quit suddenly and he was very mad about it.
Sure. Okay, fine. Judge me on the thumbnail, why don't you? And then remember how episode 200 was split into three parts?
Right.
Kieran's
excruciating parts.
Kieran spills the beans. Screenwave made James do it. James didn't know that that's what they were going to do. Well, no, I think they produced it as one episode and they split it into three because they had sold too many brand deals and that was the only way they were going to get them all submitted.
Oh, wow. That's horrible.
Yeah. And James didn't know.
James didn't know.
No.
They just did it.
Or yeah, he didn't know they were going to do that. Yeah. So he says.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Kieran hated doing the podcast. He wants to set the record straight on that. He hated doing it. He confirms that he is a very awkward person, that James is awkward in that format. He wanted instead to bring back rental reviews. He felt that rental reviews already was a podcast and it was one that more or less worked and that they should just do that instead. I think I agree.
Yeah, that makes sense.
This was the funniest revelation of the entire thing, I'd say. he spills a little tea about the fact that they bought a $25,000 table for their podcast studio. $25,000. And it's not the one that you see, like, where James is getting mutilated by the corner of it. It looked more like a kind of like a giant Dorito, you know?
Yeah, it's like a triangle, right?
We were talking about it in Discord, and I don't remember who, but somebody was like, in fairness, that is a beautiful table.
Nipple high table?
I don't know if I've ever seen a table that's like, no, that's a $25,000 table.
Yeah, I would just go to like IKEA and get a table.
And not to blow ourselves here, but like I think that the format that we have, which is split screen, you can see our faces with fairly close eye line. For a podcast format, I think this looks a lot better than, like, you know how Pat the NES Punk and Ian, they have like a wide shot, but it's split screen and it's like the worst possible eye line angle ever. Mm. I don't know. To me, that I always looked at it as like, oh, I guess like this is audio first, and you should be so lucky as to have video.
Right. Yeah. I like a lot of the podcasts I listen to are like the Zoom format, and I seem to prefer those.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it is because they're like little squares and you can see every single reaction, and it doesn't look like a dumpy camera set back.
Yeah. And we used to do Zoom and we would make it look crappy, I guess, on purpose or something. But once we decided to dress it up a little bit, it wasn't very hard. And I think it looks better than a $25,000 investment.
That's because we didn't think anybody actually wanted to listen to these things.
Yeah, right. It was for 150 people, not for 2,000. And sometimes a lot more. I don't think you probably don't remember this. A few years ago, ScreenWave put out, like, again, this is one of those videos that James was very much not in. It was like about Oculus, like it was them playing Oculus games, a bunch of ScreenWave guys.
Oh, no. That sounds horrible.
There were a few videos like that. There was one where they did like a LAN party. There was one where they were like, tell us, do you prefer the Xbox Series S or the PlayStation 5? Which one are you going to get?
Like, and they were just so disgustingly shilling that they couldn't even think they could rope in James.
Yeah. Yeah. No way. Well, also, you'd have to leave the house.
You'd leave the house and pretend he cares.
I mean, they were really just blatantly commercials. And I don't know. I think one of the major themes here is that these guys never really concern themselves all that much with the long-term reputation of the brand. They wanted to burn through the goodwill as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think, at the end of the day, the biggest villain is just ScreenWave as a whole.
Yeah.
It's not to pick on, I don't want to pick on Kieran or Newt or anybody. It's ScreenWave, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, maybe like James for allowing them to do this.
So that Oculus video, according to Kieran, they were paid $20,000 from Oculus to make that thing. And so they insisted on making it, and Kieran resisted. He did not want to appear in it. And they said, fine, we'll give you 2,000 of those dollars if you'll do it. And so he did it. Wow. And then something convoluted about he needed car repairs, and they raveled up in some weird thing where he was going to have them do the car repairs, and then they were late on the payment. I don't know. I wasn't following it.
All right.
By that point, I had fallen asleep. I was on the elliptical. So the angry lady in the back.
the belching lady?
She was a lot angrier than he was. Fuck, they're going to make... they're going to make this into Belching Lady, aren't they?
Oh, no.
What do I do? Am I going to be responsible for Belching Lady?
Let me just say, just don't harass any of these people.
Don't do it.
Please.
The British guy is not a beta. it seems like she worked for ScreenWave too, but not for Cinemassacre. That's what she was going on about. She's kind of screaming in the background is what I'm telling you. And she seemed really pissed off at ScreenWave too. And the thing that she was really hammering on was that they would get bad evals, but they didn't get feedback in advance of those bad evals. So they were repeatedly not it sounds like the feedback loop was not productive. Sounds like there's some criticism here. He described ScreenWave generally as extremely poorly managed and like a slow-mo train wreck that you're at the controls of.
Interesting.
But you can't stop.
Hmm.
Also, ScreenWave, specifically, it sounds like Justin and Ryan, he never names Ryan specifically, but he does one time accidentally slip and name Justin, and he's embarrassed about it when it happens. He said they said that ScreenWave would obsessively read The Cinemassacre Truth daily.
Beautiful.
You're very into it.
Which makes sense, because there were like a lot of strange course corrections.
Yeah, like a little too attentive to the...
Like too attentive and too...
Yeah.
Yeah, like remember when they were making fun of it, like the shirt, you know, the weird shirt, and then he like brings like, oh, you want the dirty shirt? I feel like that's just like going overboard.
Well, that's why I had this theory that I was like, I think that Justin guy, right, he's a bit of a troll. I think that guy is, I think he loves that Cinemassacre Truth content just as much as the next guy. I think he's enjoying it. I think he... You know, like those guys will sometimes speculate completely incorrectly. They'll just say something total bullshit, or like, where did you come up with that? But other times, like with like the plagiarism thing, they'll find it in like 2 seconds. So like, they'll get to the bottom of things. There's something about crowdsourcing information about with obsessive people. I remember the whole debacle with when JonTron left the Game Grumps, and it was never announced why he left, and it was kind of clear that something had happened. But it never, to this day, was official. But, like, Reddit went deep on it, and John left some kind of comment that was like, how do you guys know some of what you know? So I think probably ScreenWave, like, Justin, he reads some of this stuff. He's like, wow, that's pretty accurate, and it's pretty funny, because it's pretty, you know, it's like a good impression.
Mm-hmm.
So then at 30:39, timestamp. I'll have you know the first mention of Red Cow was at 4:40. If only he had waited 1 minute for the troll.
Only.
At 30:39, somebody in the chat was like, you should appear on Red Cow Arcade. And he was like, no, I'm not going to fucking do that, guys. He's got a little bit of a surfer thing. No, that's fucking stupid. he was saying, like, I don't want... Another major theme of this is this is probably the most ridiculous thing about the stream. He talks the whole time about how much he doesn't want to be talking about this. And he keeps being like, and another thing.
For somebody who doesn't want the spotlight, he's sure streaming a lot.
Yeah. So he was like, you know, there's this like tabloid video of me out there by Red Cow. And it's got like 105,000 views. It's got like a ton of views. And that's really weird for me because it's about my personal life and stuff. I was like, well, not exactly. It was about your professional life, actually.
I was just like, we didn't talk about your Belgian girlfriend.
not until now.
Not until now.
Yeah. He actually recants that kind of quickly. He's like, and I get that I'm a public figure, and so that... But then he said something sarcastically, and so I'm not entitled to privacy. But again, it's like I'm talking about Cinemassacre here. That's the central theme. You're just a character in the show.
Hmm.
And somebody said that they were like, but those guys were really nice about you. They were saying you're real talented and stuff. He's like, yeah, this might be true that I might have said that about me.
It's like, did he watch it?
he claims he did not because it like makes him really uncomfortable to watch something about himself. Maybe that doesn't like he doesn't know what's going to be inside that video.
Yeah, we praise him more than probably we should.
Yeah, unreasonably.
Unreasonably.
Just go there; you'll be shocked. Put our reputations on the line with trolls for you. Yeah, accused us of talking about his personal life for clicks. That we are tabloid news. He doesn't want to speak of it ever again, but knows it'll get brought back up because he said stuff. Yeah. So that was just one little response I wanted to say, which was like, hey man, like I never would have made a video talking about any of this stuff. If you had not come out and made a bunch of statements about it, I wouldn't have known any of this information. I'm just repeating the information you said.
Yeah. We're journalists.
It's just a little Streisand effect. This is all we're talking about here. He says he's not under NDA, but it sounds like the girlfriend is. Maybe she didn't belch. I don't know. I don't know where I got that. Somebody might have said that. I don't know.
Somebody said it.
Yeah, I remember my wife, for some reason, like all, we've been together for decades, and like I never heard her burp ever. And fart, sure, occasionally.
big loud ones.
But never
burp. Thunderclaps.
Until, yeah, boom! not until she was pregnant. All of a sudden she had like a... She was burping. It was so weird. I was like, I've never seen this side of you. You want to get behind me and scream about my... It'd be great. We just position her by the arcade. She'll be like, and another fucking thing. Give me fucking evals.
You tell her, Frankie.
Calm down, Frankie. It's not worth it.
I'm under NDA.
No, it's okay. It's just all stupid stuff anyway. I never want to talk about this shit again. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Matt Stone from Orgasmo, you know?
I think unicorns are kick-ass.
You know what? It was downright pretty hilarious. Because he kept, like, there's the comic timing of the video, because he kept saying he was done. And then he would just rev back up. I was like, there he goes again. I was like, what is he, me? Can't stop talking about this shit. So, salute to Kieran. Maybe that's the last time, but there's always Twitch. He could always come back.
He could stream again. Don't post it anywhere.
He said something about like he may talk more about it on Twitch, and that like he could talk to people while on Twitch. So maybe we'll show up to the chat or something. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, yeah, somebody would have to tell us when he's streaming. I don't know. I ain't got time to monitor people's streams.
No. I sent him a very nice message when this whole thing first happened. I'll read it to you. It said, "Hey, Kieran, hope all is well. You probably know we do a podcast that has covered the weird journey of Screamwave and Cinemassacre. You probably have no interest speaking publicly about what happened anymore. But in case you do, we'd love to have a respectful discussion / interview about your experience and give you a chance to clear any air you might want to clear. Either way, I hope you feel some relief having moved on to the next stage of life, and I wish you the best."
Yeah. Yeah, man. And I would still advise him not to talk to us.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Just seriously move on.
Yeah. go to Kevin Smith's ward. And yeah. They, is that all I wanted to say about that? I think so. Oh, yeah. Well, so then James did come out with a new AVGN, and it was Earthworm Jim. And
this is edited by the new guy, Sean.
Yeah, so that's why we had such a stake in it. It was like, so what is it? How does it come out when it's not Kieran? And, you know, it was just super standard that I don't think you could go wrong. You know, that seems to be the play that they made this time. There was one very bizarre moment where he was smashing up the game, and it was very clear that he was kind of miming smashing up the game, and then somebody else in a pickup was smashing it. Not to mention, like, smashing the game at this point is like a 20-year joke. Like, oh my god, is there anything else we can do? Watching a review of Earthworm Jim and Earthworm Jim 2 and Earthworm Jim 3D for the N64, which I've never played, it did make, I was like, these games, the 16-bit ones, are remarkably well animated. Like,
oh yeah.
This is the best graphics for the system, right?
Well, it's the artist that worked on Aladdin for the Genesis moved on to that.
Right? It's so good. Like, it's crazy to think that the Genesis started out with, like, Altered Beasts and some of those, like, really early titles that were almost kind of like Sega Master System titles. And it somehow turned into, yeah, Aladdin and Sonic 3 and Earthworm Jim and what else would rank really high?
Comic Zone, maybe.
Comics. Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of X-Men, the Clone Wars, a lot of really good ones, but, yeah, it makes me want to revisit those. The only thing about that, I think they might need ROM hacks that make them a little fairer, a little more fair,
yeah.
A little unfair. Makes me not want to play, but now that I have the Mega Drive, the Mega Everdrive, and I can easily play Sega CD, what I hear is that the Sega CD version is what you want. It's got more levels. It's got the CD soundtrack.
Oh yeah, I got to check that out.
That's what you want.
Absolutely.
Did you watch the episode? No.
Well, it's just like, I know what I'm, it's just, It lost me 10 years ago, and I'll check it out occasionally. I checked out the, 200. I checked out Garfield, and that, I get it.
Yeah.
I feel like he just needed to evolve that character a long time ago, and he never did.
Yeah, so we were talking about that. We were saying, what could you, because even some people were like, well, it's a basic episode. Like, whatever. Like, they don't all have to be innovative and aspirational. And I'm like, except they sort of do, because... Yeah, he's been lapped by other creators on the platform. And so you need to, if you're going to keep it around, like one play would be you retire it and you go on and do other things, which is hard. Like Doug Walker could barely get that done.
No.
He wanted to do a quiz show that fell on its face and demo reel the sketches and stuff. And so he just ended up incorporating the horrible sketches into, I watched a Doug Walker thing this week for the first time in years. It was like his review of the Simpsons movie. And goddamn, if that guy isn't just doing the same thing he's always done, he doesn't get sick of it. He doesn't get sick of it.
He's got his niche.
He shows up every week prepared to make that trash. the thing that I'm really fascinated by with Doug is it's, early, like 2007, 8, 9, 10 even, cameras were still kind of handy cams. You got your hands on whatever you could get your hands on. Like now, like everybody's cameras, the iPhone itself looks like a prosumer camera from back then, if not better. But back then, so like there was a charm to, I'm using my dad's camcorder to make my YouTube content or whatever. So I totally get it. But it felt like Doug went on an extra 7 years making it intentionally look like shit.
Yeah. I remember like around 2012 and, I was already, working as in video.
Yeah.
And I remember putting on a random, that guy with glasses thing. And it's like, is he using the onboard mic? Can I hear the DV tape spinning? Like it was like, it's.
And the white balance in particular, the white balance was always extremely off. And, and there was never a tripod unless it was kind of that standard shot of him sitting. It was just whenever they do sketches that you can tell it's just somebody just going like, go just to get it done. And yet his composition and the rhythm of his edits, they're not always funny. They're not always my style, but they have that, really faithful Looney Tunes energy. I actually think his editing and his shot compositions are really sophisticated.
Yeah. I was watching the Dylan the Night Owl thing where he covers the Teddy Ruxpin thing and just some of the the pace and editing of it was like, that's actually pretty good. Like for a horror film,
like the camera itself looks like he just shot it as fast as he possibly could. And yet some of the visual ideas are kind of inspired.
Yeah.
The guy at least goes for it. when Gloria watches YouTube content, it tends to be like, it's like families in their big house in Michigan or whatever. And they always, it's the same sort of style. It's like somebody picked up a camera. They're like, go. And then somebody just edited it really fast later with some green screen, with some bullshit digital effects or whatever. And I was like, did they all get this from Doug Walker? And Nina said something so funny. She was like, all this kids and family stuff is in his same style. It's a good thing he didn't try to copyright it the way the Reacts people. Remember the Whatever Brothers?
Yeah.
They tried to copyright the idea of reacting to a video. And she was like, Doug Walker should have copyrighted, really fast, shitty filmmaking on YouTube.
Daffy Duck style filmmaking.
Well, anyway, we were talking about what James could do. And for me, the elephant in the room, and this is not me trying to pick on the guy's looks. So they cut away from him a lot. They cut to the game footage, almost the whole time. So I imagine that Sean spent a lot of time just on game footage and just very minimal time on the nerd sitting there with a controller that's not connected to anything. And, the baldness for some reason really takes me out of it. It's fine that you're balding. But I'm constantly reminded of how long this thing's been going on for and how strained the whole thing is. And we were like, you could have done a 10 episode arc on the nerd, is up to his last hairs. You know, you can start like shaving it ridiculously. And because a lot of people have been like, why didn't he just pull it all out or something? I'm like, no, milk it. Like, make a whole story out of like maybe he tries to not get pissed off because there's only a few left. And so like the joke is that so that's the kind of creative stuff you can do. And then we were like, maybe eventually he finds out, maybe it cuts away from everything he's been doing and it cuts to like a stark reality. And you find out like this really is a guy who's been in his basement for 20 years. He thinks it's been just a few days. He thinks the N64 games are still relatively new and not retro games themselves. And like cops show up and they find like a dead rabbit with feces all over its face. And they find, you know, like Daffy Duck or Woody Woodpecker. They find all these fucking dead animals in the house. They find all these broken games everywhere and they condemn the place and there's no more nerd room. And then he ends up like, going, you know, you do like a serialized thing. You know, he ends up connecting with some Zoomers who try to explain to him what like a newish game is. And he's like completely psychotic at this point. You do something fun.
Yeah. No, I think that's the problem is that he came up with something when he was a drunk college kid. And now he's wearing the skin of this young drunk college kid on a middle-aged boring man. You know,
but there was a time when he would, I think he was bored of AV Jan a super long time ago, and to answer that he made Board James and he made Monster Madness and he did all this other cool stuff and
that was all successful.
But then what happened was once he lost all of his time, there was so much time. How come TCT has never done the Twilight Zone episode with Burgess Meredith? Was like, there's so much time now. There's no time. When he lost all of his time, I think he was like, all right, well, this is just a job. So he started making AVGN a lot more often because it was the profitable one. Because for a while, he had ramped down to like 2 a year or something. Mm-hmm. He was making all this other stuff. But then when he lost the passion, he was like, oh, fuck all that other stuff. AVGN because it sells. And we'll make 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 of them a year and whatever. Like, we'll just mechanize them. I have a theory, too, by the way. I just thought of this today when we were having a chat, one of our cyclical chats. I suspect that there was a time when James and Mike were making very good money because they didn't have, like, a company around the whole thing. And Mike was pulling on the rope a lot, James and Mike Mondays and stuff like that. And I think the two of them talked and they were like, you know, we're kind of at a point with the company now. You've got kids. I think probably for Mike, he was like, I'm making videos with Busy Bim is getting too hard. And probably the two of them were like, why don't we outsource all this? Right. That would be cool. Like, that would be a good way. You know, hey, we've done it for 12 years. Like, why don't we start outsourcing some of this stuff? And because they already knew Ryan, they went to Ryan and now they don't make the same amount that they did before, but maybe they thought like, oh, these guys can maximize profits and I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
I think Mike did it.
You think Mike is the culprit?
I think Mike is responsible for a lot of the good things that happened in their business for many, many years. I think James and Mike Mondays was a stroke of genius because that's really what bridged the content gap. That's what kept people engaged with like video game content from like a video game obsessed guy like Mike with a balanced personality like James, who's more or less comfortable in that environment when it wasn't 540. And you got it every week, like clockwork. So you could go months without a new project as long as you had James and Mike Monday. I think that was, and I think that was all Mike. It was a stroke of genius.
Why did they stop?
I think probably Mike got sick of it. He was like, I'm having a, like, they probably had a really hard teeth. Time connecting with James.
Hmm.
It was basically the podcast. Like the podcast bridges the gap of content for us, more or less.
Yeah. Or yeah, slight can carry a conversation slightly more than James, I guess.
I think so. Whenever anybody says they're like, you know, that you laugh or that you're not contributing or something, I'm like, fuck you. I actually get more pissed off when they go after you, EJ. Because I'm like, first of all, EJ's laugh is like my favorite thing in the world, okay? So don't you be, you know, dissuading him from laughing. And two, yeah, I'm just like, this is, for me, you're the perfect personality for me to bounce stuff off of. I'm verbose, you're not. We were talking in the Discord recently about people were encouraging us to slob out our operation more. And I was like over trying to explain why that probably wouldn't work well for us. And I was like caught in like too much of a discussion about it, right? I didn't want to have to keep explaining myself, but I was trying. And then you came in as you like heroically, and you were like, we're not going to do that because that's more complex of a, that would make things more complex than what we want right now. I was like, that's a good business partner. That's a good person. Like comes in, just says the thing that needs to be said and like helps me out. You know?
Well, it's true because we do this basically as a hobby. And as soon as, and you know, we've had creative collaborators in the past.
Yeah.
And it's just like James, you don't want to be pulling teeth, trying to get something out of them because nobody's as reliable as us. So you gotta, it would be managing it. And we don't need that right now.
I was talking to my wife about this recently where it feels like so often the goal of business owners, people who have been doing what they do for a long time, they want to have the legacy live on beyond them. It's like the highest goal is, could this thing keep going without me? And I don't know if that's like the right goal because whoever you are, I think of it as maybe like, what's a good example? I was thinking of the Hensons at the moment. Like Jim brought something very specific. And when he allowed Frank Oz to direct Muppets Take Manhattan, he got something pretty different. Like it carried on the legacy of the Muppets for sure. But like, you totally have to accept like that it's going to have different DNA. And then when it moved on to Brian Henson, it was kind of a different thing. And that's if you're lucky. That's like, I think all of those projects are pretty well connected, but I think everything has a heyday. I think you have to just accept the fact that the DNA of the thing are the people. The people are irreplaceable. It can become a new thing, but it can't, they can't. Apple is not the same without Steve Jobs, you know?
Yeah, I was listening to somebody. I think maybe it was one of the Film Threat people or something where they were like, he was like, I think things have a like 10 years. It's like 10 years for their heyday. Like Star Wars had 10 years. Lord of the Rings, probably had less than that. But, you know, it's like you get a group of people who are super motivated and then they do their thing and then, you know, they all move on.
That's it.
I think that's pretty good.
You just have to sort of accept it.
Yeah.
Then the question is, do you accept your own demise? Like Tarantino put a timer on his career, like so that he didn't run the risk of making bad movies, which is pretty controversial. Like some people get really pissed off with that kind of talk.
I get it. You have eyes. You see that filmmakers will just put out a bunch of duds for the rest of their career.
People are irreplaceable.
Speaking of people irreplaceable, the writer's strike is happening.
I don't know a ton about it. What can you educate me on?
I don't know. I just have an AP article. Writer strike looks to be a long fight as Hollywood braces.
And so this is about not getting the proper residuals from streaming.
Yeah, they're picketing to preserve pay and job security outside major studios and streamers. And they're bracing for a long... They're picketing outside streamers, and they're bracing for a long fight. I don't know. I think they want more pay from the streaming era or something like that.
Maybe their streaming contracts have been less than in the past.
Yeah.
But also, isn't the revenue overall down for everybody, for everything?
Yeah. Well, everything is. I mean, well, you everything's losing money.
You're not selling DVDs. You're not selling ads on television.
And how many successful media properties have, like, there was only $4 billion movies in the past 2 years. You know, it's like,
yeah.
What are you doing?
I wonder, like, what's an example of which one of them is highly profitable? Because it seems like they've all surged to try to, you know, just to win the market, basically. And so they're all in 10-year debt plans. But I bet, like, a thing, you know, like, remember when WWE just did its own thing for a while? Now it's just kind of tacked on to Peacock. You know, WWE will always have those live shows. And they'll always have that merchandise. They'll always have that diverse revenue.
Yeah, and
Disney has that too, I suppose.
And this will not be good for the industry, obviously, because we all remember the writer's strike of, what was it, 2007 or 8 or something like that. And that basically destroyed Heroes. That destroyed it. It definitely made Lost suffer.
It, like, cut Breaking Bad season one short.
Yeah,
jeopardized it. I was in Los Angeles when it was happening. I was driving by the picketing and all that kind of shit. And I remember I was an intern at 20th Century Fox, the casting department. I worked for the lady who cast Arrested Development.
Oh.
And they were all very nice to the interns, you know. They would make us ride around on golf carts and pick people up and stuff. I remember I went to a table read with Fred Willard, Kelsey Grammer, and Patricia Heaton for that show Back to You. It was like they were trying to, like, have the return of the multicam sitcom. And yeah, I remember when Kelsey Grammer walked in with no makeup and he was like, hello. And he just looked really ghastly without his makeup. This is Kelsey Grammer in the morning, you know?
I'm just, like, picturing him, like, as the Beast.
Logan. I remember they actually went, they needed to give us some tasks. They needed to keep us busy because we didn't have anything going on. We were just surfing the internet most of the day and going to lunch on the awesome lot. And they had a Moe's Tavern. It didn't look like Moe's Tavern. It was called that because it was the year after. No, it was the year that the Simpsons movie came out. So everything was Simpsons movie. Awesome. And, anyway, they were like, do you guys want to try to come up with some reality show ideas? Cause we have a writer's strike right now. And I came up with this thing called Stink Pot, and it was and I wrote it. I wrote a treatment and I sent it to him, and it was, contestants compete to see who can survive a series of, like, kind of reputational trials while stinking and being as unhygienic as possible. So, like, you have to go to the movies with a date, you know, a blind date, and you have to, like, you know, have garlic breath and fucking, you know, there's, like, the garlic challenge and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then when you lost, when you got voted off the island, they pushed you into a giant laundry machine.
Isn't that somewhere, like, that, like, JonTron video about, like, the kid town or whatever?
The funniest goddamn thing. I've rewatched the part where the kid raises his hand to get out of there so many times. And it's what he says, a little 8-year-old. I think he was 8 at the time. He goes, they're like, Timmy, are you sure you want to leave the island? And he goes, so earnestly, he goes, I am way too young for this. I just lost my shit when I heard that.
Just a big old child abuse.
It was 2008, man, or whatever it was. Yeah. You can do anything.
So yeah, all the top late night shows were staffed by writers that pen monologues and jokes for their hosts.
Oh, heavens, what will we do without that?
NBC's Tonight Show, Comedy Central's Daily Show. Oh, no! And Jimmy Kimmel Live. Oh, my goodness.
Frankie, like, what even, like, you know, there's so many of them. I feel like there's never been this many of them, and they've never been so poorly rated.
Does anybody watch these? So they must have, like, 20 writers each.
We know about Fallon. We know about Kimmel. I'm sure they get a mill or something like that. But what about Late Night with Seth Meyers? What does that get? You know, 215,000 viewers in the 18 to 49 demo. I mean, nobody's watching that.
It's nobody. You get better. YouTube is killing all of them with much less writers. They're not unionized.
And they must know it. Remember they had that, like, YouTube star have a late show. What was her name? It was like Lily Singh.
Oh,
a little late with Lily Singh was what it was. A little late was a double entendre for, like, it's a little late to give, like, a woman a talk show.
I don't know that person, but,
I didn't also either. They gave her a late show and it failed miserably.
Yeah. So I don't know,
but I didn't know that late shows could fail miserably. I thought they just stayed on the air. Don't worry about it. It's, we like what you're doing.
It's the thing that's on when you're falling asleep, right?
I remember when that was the case when I was a child. It was kind of cool.
Oh yeah, it had its time, but I don't know what they're trying to get with this writer's strike. I don't know. Besides
money that doesn't
exist.
Yeah, I don't know the finances. I know that it seems like overall revenue is down. Now the question is, the revenue that is coming in, who's it going to? Is it going unfairly to this person or that person and not the writers? But I think the public is so dissatisfied with content that, like,
yeah.
I don't know, is there an opportunity for a reckoning here?
I think there's going to be a reckoning. I think there a lot of these writers are probably not even going to come back to their jobs.
I say that, and yet, like, we posted a video yesterday, a clip of us talking about Disney and how they've lost the thread, and the amount of people that were like, I don't know, I actually think a Rey movie is going to be fun. I'm gonna hold out hope for a Rey movie. I'm like,
okay, I don't take you seriously.
I must okay. be insane.
I just don't take you seriously. Like, just even like Rey merchandise doesn't sell. Nobody cares about, like, just name one attribute about Rey. Like, just name one. I can't. You can't, sir.
But we had three Rey movies. We definitely did. I mean, they starred her ass. And you can make another. Oh, and it's going to be Damon Lindelof.
No.
Yeah.
I thought he was gone.
I don't know.
Wasn't he gone? Isn't Damon Lindelof? He said he's not doing one.
They've been trying to get something going with him in Star Wars for a long time.
Yeah. I think Kathleen Kennedy loves him. So. Yeah.
She said something recently where Kathleen Kennedy was like, I want to remind everybody that none of the shit's real. She hates it.
She hates it. Yeah.
She's my mom. None of this is real. My mom would never say something so crude. My mom understands the value of Star Wars. No, she does not at all. Damon Lindelof Star Wars film eyed Helen Mirren as old Rey 2 days ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was his idea, was to do an old Rey.
Well, you know, I could get more on board with that.
Yeah, that actually sounds a little bit more interesting.
Yeah.
Then, like, let's get Rey back, but now she's doing what Luke did in the EU.
I know. They're like, well, since we somehow blew it with Luke.
Let's just have her be Luke, because she kind of dresses like Luke from The New Hope.
Okay, so, no, you're right. Damon is not doing it.
Yeah.
They had it, some sort of elderly Rey movie planned.
Yes. And then he was like, I think he announced recently, he's like, I'm not doing it.
Wouldn't it be funny if they digitally aged her? So they're aging her, they're de-aging Mark Hamill. Nobody can play their own age.
Yeah. They'll just deep fake everybody. They'll deep fake Helen Mirren on Rey.
It's a writer's strike, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. I really hope the whole industry burns to the ground.
Yeah, there's not much hope for me. I loved movies at one time, and it's hard to imagine that we're ever going to return to that time. Outside of enjoying movies through my child, you know, going to Mario 3, 4, or 5 times.
Yeah, or you'll watch some, like, indie movie on streaming, and you'll be like, oh, that's kind of fun and interesting. But that's the thing, is they really need to control the budgets on these things. Mm. If they're going to be making, let's be frank, like, a lot of these movies are niche,
right?
You know, like, if, you know, like that Strange World or whatever movie, that's a niche movie that would only appeal to a certain, you know, crowd, which is fine. You can make things like that, but you have to make a budget that relates to that niche.
Right.
And they, yeah.
I think that's all I got.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm doing a bunch of stuff. I want to make a Game Boy retrospective.
Oh yeah.
So I'm gonna start getting supplies and.
You gonna give it the full treatment?
I think so. I might get the most treatment. Like this might take a while.
Sweet.
I'm gonna kind of cover the Game Boy Color, because they're pretty much the same system.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I'll do. I'm gonna try some things. I think
I'd be interested in more Game Boy Color discussion generally. It feels like a beloved era that is underspoken about.
Yeah, so it'll be in the style of the NES, Super Nintendo, I think. Super Nintendo. And yeah, and I do want to make that video on that smoker that my uncle gave me too.
But, oh yeah. Oh, that'd be great.
So, I just have to do it. It's been busy.
I've got my Smoky Bones BBQ video coming out this Sunday.
Oh. Cool.
I should share that with you. It's done.
Oh. Yeah, share it.
It's only like 5 minutes, but it's a fun little, we stop off at this seemingly abandoned Smoky Bones BBQ in the middle of nowhere. And then after that, I don't know, the summertime. Summertime.
And the living's easy.
Red Cow Arcade.